We can't have any informational meetings without a quorum. We can open.
No, I can be here.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is Monday, February 15th. I'm opening a work session, Oregon Health Authority Sodium Reduction Grant.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee,
go ahead.
The first item is a request from OHA to apply for a federal grant called the Sodium Reduction in Communities Grant.
Okay. Please begin. And if you can't tell from my body language yet, we're in a hurry.
Okay. Good morning, Corp Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. I'm Karen Gerard, the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention Section Manager at the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here today to request permission to apply for a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention sodium grant. The grant is a five-year grant. We can apply for between $300,000 and $500,000 per year, and it is competitive.
It's just information.
The grant requires that we work in two types of venues that serve or sell foods and work with organizations that serve at least 5,000 people. We have commitment from the Oregon Department of Education, the Department of Corrections, and the Oregon State Hospital to partner with us on this grant.
Thank you. Does this have anything to do with the samples of bread that were brought into this committee last year so that we could taste typical bread and then the reduced sodium bread? Is this
Representative Nathanson? Yes, it does. We are also working with Oregon State Food Innovation Center to continue that work.
That was it. Thank you. Ms. Ames, do you have a recommendation?
Madam Chair, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approving the submission of a federal grant to reduce sodium intake.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Is there a motion, please?
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the LFO recommendation.
Thank you.
Always a safe thing to do.
Yes, it's a good idea. Is there discussion on the motion? Objections? Motion passes. Okay. There you go.
We need to
Thank
carry.
You. I'll be happy to carry it. Does that do it? I'm closing the work session on the sodium reduction grant, and thank you for bringing that to us. I'm opening we have two informational meetings this morning. The first one, are we going to do them in the order as printed on the agenda? Fine. Oregon Health Authority, update on medical marijuana fees. And we are also opening the informational meeting on Commission for the Blind report on funding request. So that's what we'll be discussing for a while.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the second item is just an informational item. The OHA is here to update you on changes to the medical marijuana program and related fee increases. Since it's just informational, the sub will not actually be taking any action. And the presentation is in OLIS. And can you make those come on?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Andre Uso. I'm the section manager for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And we're just going to give you a little bit of information on the program and some fee increases for this year. So a little background on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. 1998 was basically the start of the program. It's largely unregulated, and we had a enrollment of around 400 patients and 200 caregivers at the beginning of the program. Today, we now have an enrollment of over 77,000 patients and over 45,000 growers. 2013, medical marijuana dispensaries were established. And then in 2014, ballot measure 91, which legalized retail and adult use marijuana. And then in last year, summer of last year, 2015, HB 3400, which made some changes to Measure 91 and the Medical Marijuana Act. House Bill 34 imposed some requirements on Oregon Health Authority. Specifically, we needed to administer a compliance inspection and enforcement program for our new processors, dispensaries, and growers, create a database to track lightly, audit, and report on the production and transfer of medical marijuana, enhance our current card program, and then ensure a strong regulatory system that would be in following the guidelines of the Department of Justice's Cole memo. And the Cole memo mentioned certain things that states need to do in order to basically have the federal government out of their backyard and be able to administer the medical marijuana programs without federal interference. In addition to some of these requirements, HB 3400 asked the Oregon Health Authority to develop educational curricula and materials in collaboration with the Oregon Department of Education and the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, operationalize the early retail sales of recreational marijuana through our medical dispensaries for the first year of the program, and then determine also THC concentration levels, labeling, and testing requirements for marijuana products in general and at the medical and retail level. Fee increases are built into these other fund expenditures with limitations approved by HB 5047. So a brief summary of these fee increases. Fees were increased for patients in October of 2011 from $100 to the current $200 level. In October 2011, grower fees paid by a patient were from $0 to $50. So patients, if they would like someone else to grow for them, pay $50 currently. Of course, there were some reductions for certain categories of patients, those receiving Social Security benefits, food stamps, and then veterans with disabilities. There are reductions in card fees for those individuals.
Can I ask a question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just for clarification, the $200 is paid by whom?
There's a $200 patient card fee, so if you would like to register for a card, you pay $200. Madam Chair.
That's annual.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, and I know you're in a hurry. So
it was just to get the first part done.
Oh, okay. The $200 is per year, every year? And then what are the amounts of the other reductions, the veterans and...
Madam Chair. Yes, it is an annual fee, and it's renewed annually, so it's $200 a year per patient. The reductions are from $200, and if you receive Social Security benefits, now you pay $20. If you receive food stamps, it's a reduction from, I think, $100 to $60. And then the veterans with 100% service-connected disability or with a diagnosis of PTSD now pay $20, now is a reduction from $200.
Thank you.
Co-chair, thanks. So the Oregon Health Authority is proposing that we charge a $200 per patient grower fee, and that would be charged to growers. This would be an annual fee, and the basis for this fee increase would be so that we can maintain statutory compliance with the requirements of HB 3400 and be able to meet all of those obligations in law. Continue to operate in conformance with the federal guidelines, and then utilizing the data that we would collect to inform policymakers with appropriate data analysis so they can make better policy or additional policy moving forward, and to inform the agency on how to best implement that policy with that data. The fee increase was, you know, we had some considerations in the amount that growers currently pay now, and then whether the opportunity for growers, for them to recapture some of those costs with selling excess inventory to dispensaries, which they currently do. So our fee proposal, including the increase for growers, would also be a $4,000 annual fee for processors. This would include a $500 non-refundable application fee that if they submit an application and didn't make it through, they would only get $3,500 back. Well, as I mentioned, the $200 per patient grower fee would be paid by growers to produce marijuana for a patient other than themselves. So if the patient wanted to grow for themselves, they would not be assessed this fee. If a grower wanted to grow for up to four patients, then they would be assessed an $800 fee since it's a per patient basis.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt for just a moment to ask Ms. Ames to explain something. It's simply because the title on the slide uses the word proposal. There's not a proposal for something new to happen. I just want to provide the context of what's already been approved and what's in the works right now.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. So first of all, the fees were anticipated when this budget was passed last spring. As part of all the special budget bill we had for all things marijuana. But at that time, they hadn't actually gone through to figure out what fees would be or if they'd need fee increases. So what you're seeing on this slide is two different things. The $4,000 for processors is a new fee because they didn't have processors before. And they've set it to be consistent with dispensaries at $4,000. The grower fee was an existing fee that they are increasing. So we've got one new one, one increased, and the increase is really related to the program needs they have now that they have to do a lot more regulation with this program.
But the authorization is already in place. From a budget perspective.
Right,
from a budget perspective.
It was, but because they're actually now going through the process of implementing them, they won't really be effective till April. But I thought it would just be good to come in and for everyone to understand, here's what's going on, here's what's going to happen, rather than being surprised in April.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ames. Madam Treasurer. Thanks. So we have in these fee proposals. I'll leave it at that word. Thanks. We have notified the public and discussed this with the public extensively. In November and December of last year, we had several rules advisory committees to review these new rules, which the fees were included. The fee increase was then presented at public hearings held throughout the state in January of this year. And then final public comment was received through January 29th, and that we're hoping to adopt these new fees March 1st with an effective date of April 1st. Some of the financial challenges and risks that the program is experiencing or will experience in the future and related to the fee increase for growers is that we are losing medical dispensaries to the retail side eventually. We'll lose medical growers to the retail side, and potential revenue loss for proposed legislation related to co-location or expanded access. We would see a significant shift from current medical producers and growers over to the retail side. And I'd be willing to take any questions that the committee members would have at this time.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to still be confused about back where it said the 50 and the 200.
Yes.
I understand the 200 and I understand the increase. I don't understand exactly what happened to the 50 and why it's decreased when you go over to the right-hand column. And I don't understand the difference between the two. The existing 50... is
so
reduced over on the right side.
Madam Co-Chair, if I may. Representative Geyer. The $50 growing fee is currently paid by the patient.
Uh-huh.
And if they would like to designate someone else to grow for them, they have to currently pay $50. To meet our obligations under HB 3400, we decided that we needed to increase the grower fee. Instead of charging the patient for that, we're now going to charge the grower themselves the $200. So the increase was shifted from the patient to the grower and then from $50 to $150.
So, follow up. So why is there any money at all under the $50 existing in the next two biennium? It's reduced from 2.129 million to 1.9 and then 0.6.
Representative Nathanson, Representative Kenny Geyer, for the record, Bill Coulomb, Budget Director of Oregon Health Authority. Mm-hmm. The reduction that you see there is, in effect, the biennialization of where you're moving from growers who currently pay a $50 amount, and then the reduction from that level to moving into the $200 category in future biennia. So, for example, like in the 17-19 biennium, mm-hmm. it's because we would anticipate a significant number of growers will be growing for others, not themselves, and therefore paying the $200 fee.
But there will be some people still paying the $50? I mean, there's still a budget item there on that. There's a 1.904 and then a 0.665. So somebody's still paying $50 in the next biennium?
Through this 2016, April of 2016. So patients are currently paying the $50 grower fee until we implement the new grower fee that would be assessed to the growers, and that's continuing from 2015 until April of this year. Yes, so it's just patients.
It's small. It's a minor. I'll follow up with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, and Representative Boone.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question about the last slide. We were looking at where we are now. The money that comes from the revenue is small amounts, and then a huge amount for school-based youth clinics. Just wondered how many clinics there are and how those numbers, you know, what do they mean? Is that a percentage of that goes to because of the legislation, or?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Boone. The revenue amounts that are reflected here are biennial amounts that have been earmarked to fund the programs. A significant portion of school-based health centers' revenue does go out to the local centers in the form of annual grants. I believe currently that public health has approximately 60 school-based health centers. So in addition to the general fund that's part of their base budget, the $538,000 is in addition to that.
Let me clarify, please. Madam Chair.
Excuse me.
Right. Some of them are.
Thing,
right. Some are in millions and some are in thousands.
I thought it was millions and I thought, wow, that's really a large amount. So thank you. And thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, they would have been so happy.
Yeah.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair.
Good information to have. Appreciate it. And we are continuing the informational meeting that I opened. Commission for the Blind report on a funding request.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, this item is just an informational item. The agency is here to explain to you their plan for some program changes and a funding request related to those program changes. Again, the sub will not take any formal action today. And in OLIS, you will see the agency's request letter. They're actually requesting money, but we're going to just hear it as a report. And there's an item called DOJ presentation, which is the AG opinion that is driving some of these changes. And I believe there's also some public testimony posted out there.
Okay. Please begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Daisha Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. The Oregon Commission for the Blind serves about 1,600 Oregonians who are blind annually, and we provide both vocational rehabilitation, employment assistance, as well as independent living services to those Oregonians. This particular funding ask is related to one of our employment programs called the Business Enterprise Program. In essence, the agency provides vocational rehabilitation services to Oregonians who are blind. Some of them may choose to enter into the Business Enterprise Program, which is a program that the agency selects, trains, and licenses individuals who, in essence, are entrepreneurs. They run for-profit businesses in public buildings and vending facilities throughout the state of Oregon. So, as Ms. Ames pointed out, one of the items that is currently in front of the agency is a recent Attorney General opinion that really emphasizes the legality of the program related to the license managers in this program who perform vending facility operations to do the day-to-day operations of those facilities. So the Commission for the Blind is part of what's called the State Licensing Agency for these public locations. You may be familiar with some of them. The public cafeterias in Oregon at both the federal, state, and local area are managed by these entrepreneurs who are blind. The agency is required to actually own and maintain the equipment of those facilities as part of our responsibility. So in the vending locations, over a period of time, there has been a business practice that is established that it actually, in essence, would save the agency money in that these vending operators who actually manage the vending locations, and when we mean vending machines, such as the ones that are in the basement of your facility here at the Capitol, the day-to-day operations of those vending locations have been subcontracted out to private for-profit organizations. And in this AG opinion, in essence, what it does is really puts the agency back into the responsibility of making sure that we are doing our responsibility as the state licensing agency to own the equipment and to make sure that we are selecting and training Oregonians who are blind to manage the day-to-day operations of those facilities. So the funding request is, in essence, to support the agency to be able to purchase vending machines and the necessary infrastructure to make this policy correction. I have with me the director of the Business Enterprise Program that will speak a little bit about the implementation as well as some of the concerns as we're listening to folks about this particular policy change.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Eric Morris. Committee members, if I screw up on that, please, my apologies. Over the last several weeks, we have been speaking with the Licensed Blind Vendors of Oregon. There are 16 currently in the program, 15 who are actually operating locations and vending routes within the state. Major concerns that have been expressed by the licensed blind vendors include making money within the program with this change of business practice, control of their businesses, and disagreement with the DOJ opinion. From our perspective, with the increased staff we received last year from the legislature, we're going to be able to provide training and continued support for the program as we make this transition over the next approximately 18 months, if the funding package is approved. We projected there will be increased employment opportunities within the individual for-profit businesses. Managers will need to hire staff to help with their businesses. The question has been raised, will it provide more opportunities for blind Oregonians? That's still to be seen. It may, we just haven't seen how that's going to go yet. Right now we're looking at maintaining operations as they are. But ultimately, with this package, it will allow the licensed blind managers within Oregon to fully maximize their vocational potential, which in fancy words means to make the most money they possibly can within their operations.
I'm going to ask the first question. So often, things boil down to what did a particular word mean, and what did that person mean when they put that word on paper. There is an opinion that's been written. Is it possible that the interpretation of the opinion is that the interpretation could be, let me say it a different way, that the opinion could be interpreted in a different way? Are we finding that a reasonable person could read it one way versus another way, the same words?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, that's a very good question. The agency was really trying to address the policy issues related to that. There have been some concerns or comments raised related to the ability to subcontract out and the, whether or not the subcontracting relationship would turn into an employment relationship if the continued, the level of day-to-day operation that's required under the enabling statutes to the Business Enterprise Program were carried out. So if you're doing the day-to-day operations through a subcontractor, whether that subcontractor actually turns into an employee at that point. So I do think that there are, like any opinion, there will be some room for interpretation. What we're really trying to focus on as the agency is, what are we supposed to be doing with the Business Enterprise Program? And it is an employment program intended for people who are blind to maximize their vocational rehabilitation and potential. And our job, from our perspective, would be, given the opinion that is in front of us, is to really provide, like we do in other aspects of the program, the tools and the equipment necessary for them to maximize their potential.
I'm going to take this a step farther with you. How much of a difference does it make who literally owns the machine if that's not directly related to who is managing it, who is supervising the filling and replacement of the contents? How does literally the ownership of the machine affect employment?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. So in essence, the management of the ownership of the vending machines in their current form are owned by the subcontractors. So the subcontractors own the equipment that's placed in these public locations, and they manage the day-to-day operations of those particular facilities. So in every other aspect of this program, the state agency, which we are the state licensing agency, owns the ovens, the refrigerators. That is part of our responsibility to actually own and maintain the equipment for these businesses. And so this is the one exception where we actually don't own the equipment, which is in these vending facilities. So we're proposing to shift that ownership back to the agency, and we would own these machines, maintain them, replace them at full life expectancy, and then the license managers who we select and train would actually manage the day-to-day operations of these equipment.
I'm still not understanding necessarily the absolute connection between owning the equipment and managing it. Are there more persons who would be employed to manage it just simply because we changed who owns it?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the ownership of the equipment, I guess what's in it for the private vending companies to offer the equipment is because they receive the majority of the proceeds from that day-to-day operation. They return a percentage of those profits back to the license manager who is assigned to the facility. In this employment-based model that we would be shifting to, there would be nothing in it, I would think, from a business model for that private vending company to offer that equipment to the state of Oregon just to be because the profits, they would be offering it to us for no business purpose. So the agency needs to own the equipment in this model in order for the license manager to be able to operate and receive the proceeds.
Well, I guess I'm saying that there are separable issues here, and it would be a matter of, could one achieve an appropriate contract to get the right remuneration for managing it and overseeing it. I'm just not seeing that there would be, that we're necessarily increasing employment opportunities by shifting the ownership arrangement. I'm just not seeing that demonstrated yet, but perhaps it will come out in other discussion. Other questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who oversees your all the financials for the commission?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Kinnegar. The agency is a separate executive branch agency. We have our own chief financial officer. In terms of the specific finances of these 16 individuals in the program, they are private business owners. They do return a proceed of their net profits to the agency in what's called a set-aside fund, and that is used in part to provide additional funds for the repair and replacement of equipment and training and so on. But their individual finances are part of their separate business.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So is it the commission-appointed board members that go over your financials every year and approve a budget? And is that information that you could share with us?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Kinnegar, the agency does have a commission-controlled board. They do provide financial oversight, but we also go through the regular process and have oversight of the chief financial office, and our analyst is with us today.
Okay, and one more follow-up, please. Thank you. And I'm also, don't know if you're prepared to answer this, maybe some of the people in the audience who I've worked with in the past can comment to this, but there was an attempt that was begun a couple of years ago to try to make sure that some of the offerings in the vending machines were healthier. And I wonder if there's been any work on that. I don't want to sidetrack us, but especially as related to your proposal to buy the machines, has that been any part of the discussion? Would there be more leverage for you to do that under a new scenario? Or how does that impact what you're proposing?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Kinnegar, I'll let Mr. Morris speak to that. We have had some activity in the healthy food area, so I let him speak to that.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Kinnegar, healthy vending is continued to be a discussion topic across the nation. And with the change in the business model, allowing the license plan manager to effectively run their own operations without a massive corporate oversight, and I think that gives them a lot more flexibility, because I know all of the license plan managers that I routinely speak with are interested in making more money. And if they can provide a product mix that is healthy that will sell, they are interested in providing that. So I think, if anything, the funding package we're looking for here provides the managers more flexibility to run their own operations without being hemmed in by a subcontractor, being able to provide only a limited. I mean, the subcontractors can provide a lot of different products, but it doesn't mix one goal for another, for a corporate goal versus a personal goal in their own business model. So I think, if anything, it would allow them to have more flexibility over their individualized clients. And ultimately, that's the program, is them running their own operations, maximizing the profits for themselves. And it's the same program that we run for cafeteria operations, for espresso stands. It's just, in this situation, it's vending machines.
Thank you.
Any other questions from here? Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, there was just, I wanted to clarify the other piece of the funding request. The general fund request is $680,000. We expect that there will be reallotment federal funds available come late summer. That is, many states don't spend all their federal allotment, and it goes back into the federal pool and then becomes available to states that might have some more match money to use. The agency anticipates using $3.2 million of additional federal funds as part of this request that would come available in, probably we would know, in August.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else on this topic? Thank you for bringing us up to date on what this issue is. There is no action planned at this time, at this meeting. This was an informational meeting only. So thanks for being here and presenting it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that all?
We have no other business before us today, do we?
Thank you, everyone. We're adjourned.
I'm trying.